Hi everyone, it's Bill Black, the Exit Coach from the Exit Coach Radio Show. You know, one of the biggest questions I get on the show is, what exactly goes into a business exit plan, and when should I start creating mine? Well, I always tell people that the best time to start was 5 years ago, but the next best time is now because you never know when you might need it. So we put together a free report that describes what an exit plan is and what you should know. You can get it free by texting EXIT PLAN with no spaces to 44222. That's EXIT PLAN to 44222. Again, text EXIT PLAN to 44222.
Welcome to the Exit Coach Radio Show, the show for baby boomer business owners who are looking for cutting-edge information as they plan their 3 to 10 year business succession and exit. Every week, we interview top professional advisors for their best tips, strategies, and precautions so you can be well-planned. And now, here's your host, the Exit Coach, Bill Black. And now the Exit Coach Radio Show proudly presents the All-Star Review, a compilation of one-minute highlights from past guests. Hear more one-minute highlights and full interviews from these guests at ExitCoachRadio.com.
Of all the things that can happen on the way to the sale of your business, having a deal fall apart because of sloppy financials is probably the worst. Here's expert Addison Adams.
In the sale of a company, you are in a very cooperative process with the other side. If you're the seller of the business and the buyer is coming in and evaluating whether to buy your business, there needs to be a high level of trust there. A trust that you are not only being open and honest about your business and what you know about it, but also credibility that you know what you're talking about. And that when you hand over your financial statements, for example, they're clean, they're correct, they're complete, and they're not misleading. Preferably, they're audited, and not only currently audited, but going back several years. And this is so that there is a confidence that comes in from the point of view of the buyer.
If you're the trustee of your company's 401k or profit sharing plan, you have certain responsibilities. What can happen when things go wrong? We ask Buck Blanton.
We have a responsibility when we run qualified plans as a business owner, or in that world we call it a plan sponsor. That person has a responsibility of due care and due loyalty to the participant. And sometimes we forget that when we run plans and we do other things. But as you said, those breaches can become kind of onerous. The 2013 audit year, there were 3,566 audits performed by the Department of Labor, and more than $2.7 billion with a B dollars in fines and penalties were levied. All of those things can be done and levied against corporate officers personally. It's not your corporate seat that might get sued or levied. It's going to be you personally.
What are some of the biggest challenges facing family businesses in their management transition? We asked Transition Consulting Group's David and Paul Karofsky for their thoughts regarding this topic.
As the baby boomers are coming of age and getting a little bit older, as the next generation is starting to get a little bit older and come into that leadership position, this transfer of not only monetary wealth, but you're talking about the businesses, the assets, whatever it might be, there needs to be a plan to transfer that seamlessly. To my dad's point, the more planning you do and you talk about it as to what that transition of ownership looks like, what is that transition of leadership? Those two are not the same. They can be similar in tie, but they can be mutually exclusive as well. But until you really have a plan as to how you transfer that business from one generation to the next, it's very difficult to do it.
When a parent passes away, sometimes dealing with mom or dad's effects can be challenging. Here's senior real estate expert Allison Whitaker.
There's different levels of sorting through things, and so we work with organizers and professional inventory people, estate sale planners. Basically, they come in and they will help you sort, is this a donation pile? Is this a for sale pile? Are these items things that we need to send off to our auction house in London to get appraised and actually auction off? There's different auction houses as well, not just Sotheby's. If it's sports memorabilia, you know, that we would recommend using. There's also that element of, is it a good time to sell the house when it comes to taxes? Taxes are a whole nother conversation, and a lot of times people think, well, the market's up, we should just sell the house, but there could be some tax ramifications depending upon the way the estate has been set up, that maybe it's better to rent it out for a couple years.
How would an attorney specializing in professionals handle a case differently? We asked Miranda McCroskey.
A young man came to me with an allegation of a hit and run, and he was looking at jail time. Going to jail was going to be a big problem for a lot of reasons. So I provided the district attorney with all the mitigating factors, all the factors that they could consider in determining his sentence. And I stressed to the DA the consequences of the criminal conviction on this young man. And the benefit is he was able to do a diversion program, which means avoiding the conviction entirely. The less obvious benefit was that he avoided the criminal conviction that would have affected his path because he wanted to be a physical therapist. From the application process to the physical therapy board through the renewals that each board has, he would have had to bring that conviction up year after year and discuss that. And so he got to avoid all of that.
At ExitCoachRadio.com, we're interviewing over 100 top advisors to get you one-minute tips, ideas, and precautions so you can be well-planned. We upload new content daily at 6 a.m. and 1 p.m. ExitCoachRadio.com. Come listen for a minute.
With all the social media platforms to choose from, why has YouTube become so popular? We asked Joan Pounds.
The younger generations do a lot more visually, so a lot of times your YouTube videos and things like that are better ways to reach out to them. I found out through my son, actually, who's a teenager, that YouTube is the second largest search engine in the world. And I never even thought about going to YouTube to find out how to do something. And the beauty about YouTube is we can create our own videos right now from our phones and upload them to YouTube. And the neat thing about that is you're creating your own celebrity during that time. People buy from those they know, like, and trust. And that's one way for people to reach out, begin to know you and to like you and to trust you.
Family businesses can be very challenging sometimes. Here's Roseanne Levy from the Roark Group.
What I tell people is think about your family and think about working with them. We address many issues of families who work together and really help them resolve them. What are they dealing with? What are their major issues? And, you know, just from there, we, you know, work with the family, work with all members of the family. Of course, all the family members have to be in agreement to say, okay, we want to make this better. We want it to work, because God knows in many cases they're not interested in cooperating and they each go their own way, and then the business tends to not thrive. So we're very much on top of what families go through. And I did have one member, I love to share this, who said, gosh, if we could only learn to run our businesses with our heads and not our hearts, we'd be a lot more successful. So that's always stayed with me, and it's really the truth.
John Murphy and David Horwich help business owners think like business buyers. Here's some of the common things that they see out there.
We tend to find many of the same things. We look at management. We look at the financial foundation. How good are the numbers, both historically and in the future? We look at the growth. What we often find is business owners spend too much money on growth. They plant a lot of seeds, and they plant too many seeds because they don't take enough time sometimes up front to determine what are the criteria they should use to judge the seeds, so they kind of plant a lot.
Another common theme that's been running through a lot of our clients over the last year or so has been sales operations and sales strategy and sales operations and development. A lot of companies that we've been working with, they're stalled out in growth and they're not sure why. And what we have found in taking a good hard look at them is that they don't have a great sales strategy in place. So we help them assess that, put that in place, and then get it going.
Today's topic is about cost reduction, specifically LED lighting. Here's Chaz Dykes.
LED lights are something in the neighborhood of 70% more efficient. So it's a substantial, very significant savings. Whenever I explain our program of cost reduction through LED retrofit, people say, oh yeah, that's exactly like what they're doing with the solar panels. And I'll tell you what, it's really very, very different than that. What people fail to understand is that if you go with the solar projects for your house and you have the panels put on, you don't own those panels. The company owns those panels, and you're just leasing them.
Oh.
The company goes in and goes to the feds and to the local government and gets all of those credits and all those rebates. They do. With my program, you own the lights, you get all of that savings in addition to the reduced cost.
Okay, so you're ready to start your exit plan. We asked for three quick tips from Stacy McKibben.
Get your number. What is it that you're retiring to or that you're working towards? Understand what that is. That'll help your team to be able to help you to work backwards from that. So know that number and be prepared. Two is look around at your team. Core values of a company are exuded and exemplified by their team. More often than not, the challenges that I see in profitability are due to the fact of lack of productivity by the team. Lastly is run your business like you drive your car. You look at your car with a dashboard, you would get in a car and you would make sure that you had enough gas, that there was no check engine light on. All of those same things apply in your business. Do you have a clear dashboard? Do you understand how to read it? You don't need to be an accountant, but you do need to understand what the numbers are, and that is the health radiant of a business.
And now the Exit Coach Radio Show proudly presents the All-Star Review, a compilation of one-minute highlights from past guests. Hear more one-minute highlights and full interviews from these guests at ExitCoachRadio.com.
Of all the things that can happen on the way to the sale of your business, having a deal fall apart because of sloppy financials is probably the worst. Here's expert Addison Adams.
In the sale of a company, you are in a very cooperative process with the other side. If you're the seller of the business and the buyer is coming in and evaluating whether to buy your business, there needs to be a high level of trust there. A trust that you are not only being open and honest about your business and what you know about it, but also credibility that you know what you're talking about. And that when you hand over your financial statements, for example, they're clean, they're correct, they're complete, and they're not misleading. Preferably, they're audited, and not only currently audited, but going back several years. And this is so that there is a confidence that comes in from the point of view of the buyer.
You're the trustee of your company's 401k or profit sharing plan. You have certain responsibilities. What can happen when things go wrong? We ask Buck Blanton.
We have a responsibility when we run qualified plans as a business owner, or in that world we call it a plan sponsor. That person has a responsibility of due care and due loyalty to the participant. And sometimes we forget that when we run plans and we do other things. But as you said, those breaches can become kind of onerous. The 2013 audit year, there were 3,566 audits performed by the Department of Labor, and more than $2.7 billion with a B dollars in fines and penalties were levied. All of those things can be done and levied against corporate officers personally. It's not your corporate seat that might get sued or levied. It's going to be you personally.
What are some of the biggest challenges facing family businesses in their management transition? We ask Transition Consulting Group's David and Paul Karofsky for their thoughts regarding this topic.
As the baby boomers are coming of age and getting a little bit older, as the next generation is starting to get a little bit older and come into that leadership position, this transfer of not only monetary wealth, but you're talking about the businesses, the assets, whatever it might be, there needs to be a plan to transfer that seamlessly. To my dad's point, the more planning you do and you talk about it as to what that transition of ownership looks like, what is that transition of leadership? Those two are not the same. They can be similar in tie, but they can be mutually exclusive as well. But until you really have a plan as to how you transfer that business from one generation to the next, it's very difficult to do it.
When a parent passes away, sometimes dealing with mom or dad's effects can be challenging. Here's senior real estate expert Allison Whitaker.
There's different levels of sorting through things. And so we work with organizers and professional inventory people, estate sale planners. And basically, they come in and they will help you sort. Is this a donation pile? Is this a for sale pile? Are these items things that we need to send off to our auction house in London to get appraised and actually auction off? There's different auction houses as well, not just Sotheby's. If it's sports memorabilia, you know, that we would recommend using. There's also that element of, is it a good time to sell the house when it comes to taxes? Taxes are a whole nother conversation, and a lot of times people think, well, the market's up, we should just sell the house, but there could be some tax ramifications depending upon the way the estate has been set up, that maybe it's better to rent it out for a couple years.
How would an attorney specializing in professionals handle a case differently? We asked Miranda McCroskey.
A young man came to me with an allegation of a hit and run, and he was looking at jail time. Going to jail was going to be a big problem for a lot of reasons. So I provided the district attorney with all the mitigating factors, all the factors that they could consider in determining his sentence. And I stressed to the DA the consequences of the criminal conviction on this young man. And the benefit is he was able to do a diversion program, which means avoiding the conviction entirely. The less obvious benefit was that he avoided the criminal conviction that would have affected his path because he wanted to be a physical therapist. From the application process to the physical therapy board, through the renewals that each board has, he would have had to bring that conviction up year after year and discuss that. And so he got to avoid all of that.
At ExitCoachRadio.com, we're interviewing over 100 top advisors to get you one-minute tips, ideas, and precautions so you can be well-planned. We upload new content daily at 6 a.m. and 1 p.m. ExitCoachRadio.com. Come listen for a minute.
With all the social media platforms to choose from, why has YouTube become so popular? We asked Joan Pounds.
The younger generations do a lot more visually, so a lot of times your YouTube videos and things like that are better ways to reach out to them. I found out through my son, actually, who's a teenager, that YouTube is the second largest search engine in the world. And I never even thought about going to YouTube to find out how to do something. And the beauty about YouTube is we can create our own videos right now from our phones and upload them to YouTube. And the neat thing about that is you're creating your own celebrity during that time. People buy from those they know, like, and trust. And that's one way for people to reach out, begin to know you and to like you and to trust you.
Family businesses can be very challenging sometimes. Here's Roseanne Levy from the Roark Group.
What I tell people is think about your family and think about working with them. We address many issues of families who work together and really help them resolve them. What are they dealing with? What are their major issues? And, you know, just from there, we, you know, work with the family, work with all members of the family. Of course, all the family members have to be in agreement to say, okay, we want to make this better. We want it to work, because God knows in many cases they're not interested in cooperating and they each go their own way, and then the business tends to not thrive. So we're very much on top of what families go through. And I did have one member, I love to share this, who said, gosh, if we could only learn to run our businesses with our heads and not our hearts, we'd be a lot more successful. So that's always stayed with me, and it's really the truth.
John Murphy and David Horwich help business owners think like business buyers. Here's some of the common things that they see out there.
We tend to find many of the same things. We look at management. We look at the financial foundation. How good are the numbers, both historically and in the future? We look at the growth. What we often find is business owners spend too much money on growth. They plant a lot of seeds, and they plant too many seeds because they don't take enough time sometimes up front to determine what are the criteria they should use to judge the seeds, so they kind of plant a lot.
Another common theme that's been running through a lot of our clients over the last year or so has been sales operations and sales strategy and sales operations and development. A lot of companies that we've been working with, they're stalled out in growth and they're not sure why. And what we have found in taking a good hard look at them is that they don't have a great sales strategy in place. So we help them assess that, put that in place, and then get it going.
Today's topic is about cost reduction, specifically LED lighting. Here's Chaz Dykes.
LED lights are something in the neighborhood of 70% more efficient. So it's a substantial, very significant savings. Whenever I explain our program of cost reduction through LED retrofit, people say, oh yeah, that's exactly like what they're doing with the solar panels. And I'll tell you what, it's really very, very different than that. What people fail to understand is that if you go with the solar projects for your house and you have the panels put on, you don't own those panels. The company owns those panels, and you're just leasing them.
Oh. That,
the company goes in and goes to the feds and to the local government and gets
credits.
All of those credits and all those rebates they do. With my program, you own the lights, you get all of that savings in addition to the reduced cost.
Okay, so you're ready to start your exit plan. We asked for three quick tips from Stacy McKibben.
Get your number. What is it that you're retiring to or that you're working towards? Understand what that is. That'll help your team to be able to help you to work backwards from that. So know that number and be prepared. Two is look around at your team. Core values of a company are exuded and exemplified by their team. More often than not, the challenges that I see in profitability are due to the fact of lack of productivity by the team. Lastly is run your business like you drive your car. car. You look at your car with a dashboard, you would get in a car and you would make sure that you had enough gas, that there was no check engine light on. All of those same things apply in your business. Do you have a clear dashboard? Do you understand how to read it? You don't need to be an accountant, but you do need to understand what the numbers are, and that is the health radiant of a business.
Hi everyone, it's Bill Black, the Exit Coach from the Exit Coach Radio Show. You know, one of the biggest questions I get on the show is, what exactly goes into a business exit plan, and when should I start creating mine? Well, I always tell people that the best time to start was 5 years ago, but the next best time is now, because you never know when you might need it. So we put together a free report that describes what an exit plan is and what you should know. You can get it free by texting EXIT PLAN with no spaces to 44222. That's EXIT PLAN to 44222. Again, text EXIT PLAN to 44222.
Welcome to the Exit Coach Radio Show, the show for baby boomer business owners who are looking for cutting-edge information as they plan their 3 to 10 year business succession and exit. Every week, we interview top professional advisors for their best tips, strategies, and precautions so you can be well-planned. And now, here's your host, the Exit Coach, Bill Black.
Welcome to the show, everyone. Thanks so much for joining me once again today. It's always a pleasure to have you with me. My first guest today is Tom Gandolfi, and he's joining us from Three Bridges Financial Group in Atlanta, Georgia. We're going to talk about some of the trends that are happening. Three Bridges Financial Group is a market watcher and investment advisory firm. I think we're going to talk a little bit about what's going on with China today. We'll get to that topic as soon as I get Tom back on the phone. Right now, I'm waiting in Denver here at a BEI conference where we talk about all things exit planning. And it's a very interesting topic. What I'm finding today is that the market for business sales has not been hotter in many, many years. So a lot of the conversation and discussion is going around how to structure business sales, how to create an attractive saleable business, and what you can do really to drive that value as time goes by. So I'm going to see if I can get Tom back on the line. I'll be right back with you right after this.
And now the Exit Coach Radio Show proudly presents the All-Star Review, a compilation of one-minute highlights from past guests. Hear more one-minute highlights and full interviews from these guests at ExitCoachRadio.com.
When your business value is wrapped up in your client list, what's the most important thing you can do to drive the value of your business? We asked expert Stacy McKibben.
If you don't have really strong, you know, client relation management tools, CRMs, as they're lovingly referred to, if you don't have tools like that in your business, it's going to be very difficult to transition it over. As a matter of fact, your next buyer is going to use that as a reason to drive down your sale price. Absolutely, one of the biggest areas of opportunity that we see in professional services businesses are going back to your existing and previous clients. Oftentimes, we just forget that they don't necessarily know the full breadth of services that we provide and how they can use us or even refer us to their friends and family. So that is a big win in most businesses, is just starting there. And it's very difficult to do if you don't have a good system in place with which to do it.
One of the most common ways a business is sold is through something called an earnout. And we asked for information and an example from business broker Chris Bond.
What buyers want to have happen is they want a seller to prove the actual value of the business by having them be patient and waiting for a piece of the payout. So in other words, once the transition period has happened, say 6, 12, 18, or 24 months, the buyer will make additional payments with the comfort that, okay, it is what you said it is. Had a very creative deal earlier this year where down payment was made for about 80% of the deal. A bank stepped in for a percentage of the deal. The seller actually financed another small percentage of the deal. And the earnout comes in years 3, 4, and 5. So everybody's pulling in the same direction, making sure the first 2 years go very smoothly.
What are some of the challenges for leaders in this knowledge-based economy? Here's CEO Coach Bill Anton.
The person that has the most influence over the entire organization is the person that leads the organization. And transforming that person exponentially influences change. My training as a psychologist, my understanding about the kinds of organizations that are going to be successful in the future are going to be organizations that realize that knowledge is their product and that knowledge can only be created by enrollment. not by compliance. And so the task of the leader of the future is to transform the people that work in the organization so that they want to give their best and so that they're willing to offer ideas and perspectives that create knowledge and innovation for the organization.
Medical insurance is a big part of your budget. How do you contain those costs? We ask benefits expert Rep Bray.
We'll talk about wellness is how we can start to communicate the importance of wellness and that we give the people and the employees the opportunities to do things that will help them to become healthier. We start to educate them on the importance of annual physicals. We start to educate them on preventative care. Women do this quite well. Men have a tendency to wait till body parts don't work and then they go, which can be late. And it's interesting, we take better care of our car. We change the oil. We see the light, the lamp light comes on, and for a lot of us, we don't do the maintenance that we should do on a regular basis. That will identify a lot of issues that people have that now you can start to address either through medication, through exercise or diet. There are just a few key areas that you can identify that will drive these higher costs.
Okay, so we've heard the term before, treat your business like an investment. It'll be a lot easier to sell down the road. What exactly does that mean? We asked an expert, Don Berzin.
Many of us in the field encourage owners to look at their business as an investment. Some owners understand that concept, but many do not. I mean, for a number of them, they see their business as either a job, a cash machine, a passion, or an extension of who they are. And the term investment sounds a little too removed for them to relate to. And we also let it be known that a business is actually easier to sell when it has a passive ownership. I mean, an owner who is not personally critical to maintaining future cash flows. But let's face it, I mean, one of the last terms that ever come to mind when we think about most entrepreneurs is passive. You know, these people are doers, they make things happen, and sitting on the sidelines is not something that many of them want to do at any stage of their career.
You're listening to one of many shows on ExitCoachRadio.com. We're interviewing advisors, authors, and thought leaders for their best tips, ideas, and precautions so you can be well planned. If you'd like to be a guest on any of our shows, go to guest.exitcoachradio.com. ExitCoachRadio.com. Come listen for a minute.
You're listening to ExitCoachRadio.com, the information station for age 50 plus business owners, where we're interviewing top advisors for their best tips, ideas, and precautions so you can be well planned. We upload new 1 minute tips every day. ExitCoachRadio.com. Come listen for a minute.
Well, welcome everyone. Thanks so much for joining me once again today. Always a pleasure to have you with me as we interview top advisors and authors about their tips, ideas, and precautions for business owners. And joining me today is John Grace. And John's been with us, been a few years since he's been with us before. And last time I recall, we talked about using demographics as tea leaves to read the economy. So we'll see what John has in store for us again today. John, welcome. Thanks so much for joining me once again today.
Good to be with you again, Bill.
Hey, John, now it's been a while since you've been on the show, and we really enjoyed the last interview. Tell our listeners a little bit about you and your background and what you've been up to.
Well, we've been up to trying to prepare people for the good, the bad, and the unforeseen, I think, starting in 2019. And we actually started doing that in 2007, Bill, which I think, you know, what do they say? Sometimes it's better to be lucky than good. And the way we,
right.
I was talking to someone like you, you know, always looks at things, makes great observations, and said, you know, 2000 to 2002, that was a 50% loss. Suppose it happens again. And let's just be ridiculous. And suppose it happens in the next 10 years. And I'm like, ooh, that's a good question. Notice they're not predicting anything. What they're saying is, suppose what happened before happens again. And I like that logic. So we started with our largest account at the time, January of 07, a $10 million pension plan, and went to the trustees and said, look, we want to make some changes to your portfolio. Well, they said, we'll get back to you, you know, life changes, and there were some births, some deaths, and we didn't see them again until 2009. Now you can imagine they're mad as hell. But here here's where it gets a little more interesting. You know, the market's off 37. Many retail accounts, as you know, off 40 to 45%. Their portfolio, as it was off 14%. And I said, well, geez, folks, have you looked at your retail accounts? Because 14 isn't bad. But let's go back, because a couple of things need to be brought to your attention. One, we were here in January of 2007, and we've been keeping track of what we suggested relative to how you could make some changes to the portfolio. And every quarter, my math man has been sending your CFO a comparison between what you have and what you would have had on a quarterly basis, so that you can see that, you know, the progress has been made, or the disparity over time. And now we're, what, a couple of years later, and the difference is over $3 million. And the distinction, Bill, was that in the proposed recommendations, the reality would have been the loss would have been limited to 4%, which, of course, is even easier to get recovering back from 14%. And again, compared to the market at 37 and most accounts at 40, I'm all smiles saying to them, geez, we tried to help you get ready for this. You weren't ready to talk about it. I guess we have your attention now. So here we are, deja vu all over again.
Here we are again. And, you know, there's a lot of, I don't know, wild news going on. The economist on one side are saying, well, a recession's coming, and then you have Bank of America saying, no, we don't see it. And the administration, of course, is just plowing out the smoke to try to, you know, there's nothing to see here. What are your tea leaves telling us now?
Well, let me say it this way. I would say avoid drinking my friend Larry Kudlow's Kool-Aid. Don't drink the Kudlow Kool-Aid, okay? He has a job, and folks who have a job want to protect their job. They certainly want to please their boss. So let's understand that's their numero uno priority. Period, full stop, okay?
Right.
With the folks who manufacture product, okay? If I own a mutual fund company or I underwrite stock, Bill, when do you think I'm going to tell you it's not a good time to buy stock? Can you think of a time I might come up with that?
When it's at the all-time highs, when it's, right?
Well,
when it's...
what I'm saying is if I'm manufacturing, if I'm a realtor, right, when's not a good time to buy a house? If I'm a stockbroker or my company manufactures stocks or we have a whole lot of assets under management, the last thing I want to do is scare everybody, right? So I think, it's part of my job, my requirement to say, hey, pay no attention to the man behind the curtain or Kellyanne Conway, the woman behind the curtain. Everything's just fine. Let's just notice this. We can observe that there have been, what, 2 50% losses or so in the same decade, 2000, 2002, 2008, 2009. Who said that was going to happen? So let me just point out, it doesn't matter who's right. It matters who's ready. So we don't care what they have to say. What I'm saying is do not be surprised to see and we're preparing our clients accordingly, like we started in 07, because we would not be surprised to see a 27% loss this year. Now, let's just go back a bit, because fourth quarter 2018, who recognized in advance that there was going to be a 20% loss September 20, 21st to Christmas Eve? Nobody. And was that a rude awakening? Oh, yes, it was. But for folks who were prepared, we can see the evidence that their losses at that time was about 6 or 7%. That's a lot better than 20. Certainly easier to recover. So that's my point. The president didn't suggest we were going to see a stock market loss. Larry Kudlow didn't. Nobody from Merrill Lynch, Bank of America, Charles Schwab. So, and the point is, if the investor's willing to do the work and use technology, it may be that they can define or at least describe what kind of loss they could live with, and then see what they can do to see how their portfolio performed. And the last piece is to look at how you can design a portfolio that might perform within your risk loss parameters, so that no matter what the market does, you can sit back cool, calm, and collected because you're, you know, 15-20% within your high water mark. You're not going down like the Titanic.
Do you find that a lot of people have been pushed out onto outer branches of the tree, if you will, because of the absence of safe alternatives that have any type of a yield? And, you know, we're talking about potentially negative interest rates in the future, like this is happening in Europe. Do you think people have ventured too far out onto the limbs and they need to do a reality check at this point?
Absolutely, without question. And one of the ways that you can really see that is in the debt level. And I think we were, as consumers in 2008, my number is about $13 trillion. The last time I looked, that was just a week ago. Consumers are now at $14 trillion. That's all debt, you know, credit card, houses and whatnot. House mortgages are higher than they were back in 2008. And, I mean, there was a gentleman I happened to follow who was with the 168 firm, year old firm that failed, Brian Scozzi, and he says, you know, what have we learned in the Great Recession? And he said, squat. I think he's right. So yeah, everybody's taking on more debt. Everybody's thinking that all trees grow to the sky. Everybody's believing that the road to riches is an easy one, and all we need is good news, and we can just make this thing go. But now let's look at it this way, Bill. This is a part of the puzzle that I think it certainly fascinates me, and that is we get so lost in the politics, right? Blue, red, good, bad. Well, wait a minute. Let's look at the ordinary behavior of people. 14, by the way, is the age at which most of us consume the most potato chips in life. 40 is the age at which you bought the most potato chips for your average 14-year-old in life. No, I mean, that's just watching the pattern of ordinary people. So here we are today, globally, we have more people 65 years old and older than we do 5 and younger. Huh?
Mm-hmm.
When has that happened for? Never. I mean, thousands of years. I don't know how far back it goes, but thousands of years. There's always been babies. So it helps understand, for example, why a good family friend from Argentina went to Italy for a wedding, took their one-year-old, could not find baby diapers in any supermarket. They could find adult diapers. So what I'm trying to say is, regardless of those who say the economy's just fine, and just watch me, I'm your guy, we're going to make this puppy grow at 4, 5, 6%, and we all go, oh my goodness, that sounds so good. But at the end of the day, if you're retired at 65 and you sold your big house at 78 and we die in the mid-80s, here comes 76 million people on that path, and for the first time ever, the U.S. of A. will suddenly wake up to, 25% of the population that's gone to heaven. Now, what can you buy, cash or credit? it's not doom and gloom. That's you can't buy anything. So right now everybody's excited. Oh, the consumer's saving the day. Yes, but let's go back. Let's look to see how they're doing it. It ain't cash. It's all credit. At some point, that stops and then it breaks.
Yeah. It's a cycle. It repeats itself, like you said. But the things that are different are the demographic trends, and like you mentioned, I've read this before that in the person's 40s, they're spending as much money as they're going to spend, and you illustrated that so well with potato chips. But it's RVs, it's houses, it's travel, it's everything that they're doing, and now we're as a country, we're on the other side of that average as far as our population is concerned. So the trends, there's also people that say, well, that just means there's more people that are going to be doing things like leisure and travel and things like that. Is that realistic to think?
Yes, but let's just look at it like this. It's very reasonable. It's very logical, but it's also 100% optional. When you're in your 40s, you had kids on average. You could not make enough money. You could not spend enough money, right? I mean,
right.
The average household income in America is, what, $64,000, $65,000 a year? That's whether one or two people are working. Your audience makes far more than that, but it doesn't matter when you have kids because they eat up everything. And then they're gone, and now your spending, other than healthcare, is almost 100% optional.
That's a really, really good point. And a lot of that, of course, if you think about travel, and I see, been out on vacation like a lot of people over the summer, and see people in these mammoth RVs. They're paying $4 a gallon for gas. Wondering, wouldn't it be cheaper to stay in a hotel somewhere? All that gas, but of course, So, like you say, a lot of that is optional spending. I guess what the big question on a lot of people in that age group's mind is, where do I go to get income?
Oh, that's a good question. And let me back up a bit. I was trying to get the firm name. Now I remember it's Lehman Brothers, 168 years. I mean, that's been around for a minute, right? $600 billion in assets, like similar to the same amount in debt. Notice that combination, sound familiar? And boom, they're gone. So, yeah, when it comes to income, what we would say is the first thing that folks need to do is if you're on approach for retirement, the question becomes, what's your target? I mean, think of it this way. Like, let's go back. $65,000 is roughly the average household income. Let's suppose you say, I want to retire at 70, whatever the age might be, and you look at Social Security and you're expecting 20 grand. Okay, that helps. It doesn't cover, but it helps. I'm 40 grand short. So today, what that means is, if I'm going to abide by the 4% rule, which of course says that I think I can see a yield of 4%, we'll talk on that. You know, what amount of money do I need to put in a place where the yield is 4% will give me the difference of 40 grand? And that answer is $1 million.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
How many of us, okay, can put our hands on $1 million today? Not very many.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Not very many at all. In fact, one of the last reports I saw suggests that only 10% of boomers are prepared with that kind of money on the sidelines. And let's just go back and look at the folks, the government workers, right, educated, highly, you know, well compensated, and all of a sudden they're 30 days out from being able to pay the rent. Really? And is it really the truth that 40% of us can't put our hands on $400?
Incredible.
And it's a great economy, right? Great economy. Best economy ever. Nope, it's not. So when you first mm-hmm. you want to see the target. Then if you're trying to produce that income of $40,000, that suggests that we design the portfolio where we're using primarily high dividend paying stocks, you know, to produce a yield of 4%. And now you know, no matter what the market does, I think it's reasonable to expect $40,000 from a $1 million account. And if it is the case, and it's not, but if it is the case that, you know, ideally my value sees no less than $1 million and I don't take out more than $40,000, well, this will probably last as long as I last.
Mm-hmm.
That's the question. And then you want to fold in some things like alternative vehicles, some liquid, some illiquid. But the point is, if we go back to 2008, we can look at institutions like Yale Endowment, for example. And we can see
mm-hmm.
that their portfolio
mm-hmm.
is vastly different than the retail investor's portfolio. I mean, there's no big bets here. The biggest bet, I think, is 17%, and that's for venture capital, a position that most retail investors don't even know anything about. So my point is
right.
we want to have active management strategies to keep the losses limited where possible in a bad year and then be fully invested back in a good year. The second part of the puzzle is to have positions, legs under your portfolio stool, not two legs, 60% stocks, 40% bonds, but maybe four or five or six or seven. Yale has eight asset classes, I count. That's a pretty substantial stool with eight legs under it. So
right,
they're trying
right.
to cover their bets, yeah, so that no matter what happens, they can maintain their consistency, which is, as you read their history, that is one of their principles.
I don't know that if I can name eight different asset classes. I mean, stocks, bonds, alternatives, including real estate, hedge type investments. What else might go into that, John?
Well, we like private equity where it makes sense. We like business development corporations. We're not high on residential real estate. And let me just touch on that for a minute. Again, going back to watching the behavior of ordinary people. What have we been taught? It's about inventory. It's about location. It's about interest rates. I'm going to tell you that's all bogus. I'm going to say to you it's watching the ordinary buying behavior of individuals. Okay? So what does that mean? 31 is the age at which most Americans bought their starter home. 41 is the age at which most Americans buy their biggest home. All right, so boomers, 46 to 64, can go check, check. Let's look ahead. This is the information that nobody shares. They don't pay for independent research, so I guess nobody looks. But the data's there. 78 is the age at which most people sell their homes, period.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. So you tell – and then let's look at it like this. if the economy is really a function of people, and I'm going to submit primarily it is, particularly in this country, 70% of spending, then we want to recognize when there are tailwinds and when there are headwinds to any investment vehicle, and we cannot afford to be emotionally attached because things go awry. And so if we go back to history, the best example I can find would be the Great Depression. And let's just pause there for a moment to say that on a per capita basis, more Americans became millionaires as a result of the Great Depression than any other time in history. So maybe that's where cash is king comes from, because if you have cash instead of equity, whatever that equity might be, you have the cash, you can step up and buy what you want, residence, commercial property, stocks, companies for 30, 40, 50, 60 cents on the dollar. That's where GM came from. They bought up personally held companies. These were family-owned businesses. So that's the good news about, quote, a Great Depression. But the numbers are – these are the numbers in terms of the stock market and in terms of real estate. Let's suppose you're an adult, 1929 or so, and you had $1 million in stocks and $1 million in real estate. And then 2 years later, approximately 24 months, Bill, in both cases, the stocks were off 89%. That means what was $1 million is suddenly 108,000. I'm sorry? What?
Right.
108?
Right.
And for my buy and hold crowd, yes, you got back to even in 20 years. We'll come back to that
right.
in a second.
Right.
In 20 years. Okay. Now, let's talk about New York real estate. Always a great place to buy real estate, right? Well, I can find sources that suggest that New York real estate prices, at the same time the market was down 89%, was off 69%. So, wait a minute. Let's do that math. Wait. A million in the stock market went to 100. The real estate went from a million to minus, we'll say, 600,000, 700,000. So, you have what? Let's use a high number, 400,000. So you had 2 million, now you're left with 500,000. Really?
Ouch.
Have a nice day. Yeah. And in the case of the real estate, it took what my sources suggest 40 years for New York real estate to fully recover. Four decades. Now, here's the last piece of the puzzle. Let's just recognize, if you're an adult, early 1900s, what was the average lifespan? Well, that'd be about 57. So that
right,
means you
right.
went from who's who, right, to who's he, and you died, or she, and you died with regret long before you saw a full recovery in your whatever real estate you had and whatever stocks you own in the Dow at that time. So that's my point. Let's look at that scenario and imagine, that hypothetically, if that were to happen again, could I live with it? If you can live with it, you're good. If you can't, you might want to see where you can limit the losses so that you can keep the account value intact, and that way you don't run out of money before you run out of time.
John, always great to talk with you. You bring up so many great ideas, and you explain it so great, so wonderfully. When our listeners are looking for help from you, someone like you, what's a first step, and how's the best way for them to get in touch with you?
Well, Bill, I think the first step is really this question. Let's just say it like this. I've only been in the business for 40 years, and so I qualify to apologize for my peers. And one of the things that we've conveyed, I think, very well is buy and hold no matter what, no matter what happens. And I'm saying, well, that's true when you don't need the money or when you can continue making withdrawals. But when you're starting to take withdrawals, either because you have to, required minimum distributions from traditional retirement accounts, or you want to, right? I mean, if we go back to 08, and let's suppose you had $1 million, you retired, and the market took away 57%. On top of that, you needed $30,000 as simply a 3% withdrawal on a million. That's pretty reasonable. Well, that means your $1 million is now a little light of $600,000. And now you have to start the next year with $400,000. Sound like fun? Uh-huh.
No.
So that means you need 150% gain just to get back to even. So the what we have set up is the use of technology on our website, for example, where folks can just kind of ask themselves, we prompt them with the questions so that you can see what kind of loss can you accept. Is it 8%? Is it 40%? We want you to see it in dollar terms. We want you to see it in percentages. And then, as I say, go back to see what the current portfolio did, because sometimes it exceeded investors' expectations to the downside. And then the last piece of the puzzle is, geez, let's see what we can design so that we could see how it held up maybe better in fourth quarter 18, 2008. If it held up better during those times, it might hold up better than the next time, as opposed to just say, hold and hope, sit and take it, stocks for the long haul, no matter what happens.
So it starts with examining alternatives, asking questions, giving you a call or getting in touch with you. What's the best way for our listeners to get in touch with you?
Well, certainly can call us. That's 805-495-2077. And then YBPOR, YBPOR.com is our site. And if you go there and look at Riskometer, that the first part of it, you click on that, and the first half I give two paragraphs on what the market I think is doing, and then below that you're asked questions about how much loss you could accept, and it gives the investors the ability to really look at each other and really assess what do we think, you know, because if we're just talking about I'm a moderate, conservative or aggressive investor, what does that mean? Nobody knows. What's more important is to say, hey, I see we were down 42%. I don't want to do that again. I want to be down. I'm happy to be down 8. I think I can deal with that. But if it gets beyond that, I may not be a very happy camper. So that's the using the technology, and it's vastly different than just grouping people as moderate, conservative, or aggressive, which, as I say, for the most part,
right,
you don't understand, neither do I, and nobody else does either.
Yeah, this is not the same economy that we're used to looking at. I mean, things do come around in cycles, but if you're concerned, if you're wondering, you know, is this market going to take some turns? It might be time to take a look at your asset allocation and talk to someone. Certainly, John is a good candidate for that. John Grace, and John, really appreciate you coming on. And again, the number is 805-495-2077. Or check out the website like I am right now at ybpoor.com. A lot of great tools and advice there. And again, it can start a conversation with someone who can really help you figure out what the future is going to look like for you and whether you're going to regret not making a decision or really be excited about some of the changes that maybe someone like John suggests. So, John, I appreciate
you
coming on.
Well,
you
might not
Thanks,
get
man.
Excited. My pleasure, Bill, but let's not be complacent.
Well, like you said, I mean, you know, let's not be complacent. If you do something now, you might be, you know, we never know if the market's going to find new highs tomorrow or just fall out of the sky. It's been like that for a little while, and I think we're all starting to wonder with some of the economic news and the wild swings the last couple of weeks, you know, whether this is a good time to take chips off the table. And a lot of that rests with the investor themselves, right? Their sleep factor, whether
exactly.
they can sleep at night.
Absolutely.
John, I really appreciate
and let's
you
just
taking
recognize
the time again.
The world is slowing. So my pleasure, Bill.
Yeah.
Good to chat with you.
Yeah, it was great. And it's been too long. Let's chat again soon. I look forward to it. Thank you so much for joining me once again today.
My pleasure. Talk to you soon.
We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back after this, so please stay with us.
Hey, everybody. It's Bill Black, the Exit Coach from the Exit Coach Radio Show. One of the questions I get asked the most is, how do I grow the value of my business? I'm so busy working in it, I need to work on it. So we've created a special report for you on 10 tips to grow the value of your business. Just text the word DRIVERS to 44222 to get a special free report right to your inbox. That's DRIVERS to 44222. Text DRIVERS to 44222.
Thank you for listening to Exit Coach Radio.
Hi, everyone. It's Bill Black, the Exit Coach from the Exit Coach Radio Show. You know, one of the biggest questions I get on the show is, what exactly goes into a business exit plan, and when should I start creating mine? Well, I always tell people that the best time to start was 5 years ago, but the next best time is now, because you never know when you might need it. So we put together a free report that describes what an exit plan is and what you should know. You can get it free by texting exit plan with no spaces to 44222. That's exit plan to 44222. Again, text exit plan to 44222.
Welcome to the Exit Coach Radio Show, the show for baby boomer business owners who are looking for cutting-edge information as they plan their 3 to 10 year business succession and exit. Every week, we interview top professional advisors for their best tips, strategies, and precautions so you can be well-planned. And don't miss our one-minute Exit Coach tip of the day on ExitCoachRadio.com. And now, here's your host, the Exit Coach, Bill Black.